3. Greetings and salutations from the Agile Revolution. This is Tony.
And this is Craig. And Tony,
and we're back.
This is a normal podcast, not one where we're harassing someone at a conference.
That's exactly right. We're not even in the same room for a change.
No, well, we're in the same state.
Yeah, or the same country, Craig.
Yeah. I look back, this podcast started... How many years ago did we start this podcast, Tony?
2011 or something stupid like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, so we've been going for a long time, but it started off as, you know, three pals sitting in a meeting room in a working for the same company. But we just looked back before. We actually haven't got together sitting down on a podcast for near on 2 years. So sorry about that, listeners. Sorry that we're back, listeners, whatever that may entail.
What it might be, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we do talk recently, but we just haven't turned the, you know, plenty of interviews, but it's good to be back again, Tony.
Yeah, it's good to just chat on the general state of the nation, Agile, the world.
And we should just take this moment to say hello to our good buddy Renee, who would like to have been here, but is apparently not feeling too well in Sydney. So hello, Renee.
Hello, Renee, and we'll refer to you during the night.
I'm sure we will. Sure we will. So, Tony, what's been happening to you in the last couple of years?
Yeah, so obviously I've left the company that I was originally working for, and I've joined another company as a consultant and got out into the bright, big, bold world and now helping many different organisations.
Excellent. What are you seeing, Tony? Like, because that's the world I've been in for a few years. Yeah, what's your state of the nation?
Listen, it's a very interesting state. I think what I'm seeing is a lot of people doing what they're saying is agile, not really doing it well. There are some doing some good things, but in general, a lot of people not quite sure where they're at with it. A lot of what we call dark agile or fake agile, which can be quite perturbing for me. And the other thing that I talk to a lot of organizations about at the moment, or talk to a lot of leaders about, because that's where I'm working, is that, you know, I'm seeing a lot of organizations that have grown or reshaped or rebuilt themselves, gone through restructures, and it's their collaborative connective tissues that are really causing the problems for them as well.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by collaborative connective tissues?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing that I've sort of formed. So that sort of goes to the thing that also whilst we've been away, I've got very involved with Mr. Coburn and the Heart of Agile.
Okay, so there's our Alistair Coburn mentioned for the podcast. So ding.
Ding, tick.
I think we should put out Agile Revolution bingo cards, and they can mark them off. Right?
Yeah, that'd be the way to go.
Tony mentioning Heart of Agile. Tony having a rant about Safe. You know, I think
one of those for a while.
We can make a drinking game on it, I think.
That would be good. I'd get quite drunk.
Craig making fun of Tony. Yeah, there's all sorts of things we can make a bingo card on.
Yeah, it sounds good. Well, one of the things with the Heart of Agile is that it's, you know, collaboration, right, is part of that Heart of Agile. And it's one of the most important parts of it, as far as I'm concerned, is that when organizations, what I'm seeing with organizations is that, you know, to make any kind of organization work, collaboration will make it better, right? The better you can have that ability to talk or make decisions. And as organizations grow, I talk a lot about the connective tissues. So that's, you know, vertically and horizontally about how they communicate, you know, linking strategic intent to their delivery, for example. Right. And as organizations grow and shape, those beautiful collaborative tissues they may have had once before are all gone because they change the teams, they may change their structures. And humans are, you know, an amazing crew. What they do is when those collaborative connective tissues disappear, then they form other ways of getting things done. Now, that really optimizes for their particular localized area, but it may not be right for the whole of the organization when it comes to the collaborative way of working. And so, you know, I talk a lot now about if you want that collaborative state of, you know, trust and culture, you really need those connective tissues, and you need that so that you can make those really fast directional decisions that allow you to move your organization forward at speed.
Mm. And what do you think is holding people back from having that?
I think there's a couple of things that I'm seeing. So it's interesting. I think there's the dark agile thing. So you and I have talked a lot about the fail agility. In fact, you know, we did a talk about that together. And that fail agility at those three different levels, right? So it's quite easy to capture the hearts and minds, I think, of senior leaders quite often. However, it's that middle frozen layer that doesn't tend to want to be changed, or as you change the organizational structures, they form their little silos of power, and then they control the power. So then that doesn't work. I think the other thing that causes that is not really using agile. You know, saying they're doing agile. In fact, I really hate that, as you and I have talked about a lot now. Maybe the word agile's done, because what we're really trying to create is agility, right? And when they start harnessing these frameworks that allow them to tick a box and say, I'm doing agile, but I'm not really, and all it's done is actually put a wrap around waterfall or those types of things, then they haven't achieved anything anyway.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of bad press where people go, oh, we tried agile and didn't work here, and it's like, well, not sure you really did.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Or, you know, and I don't want to get into the rant things. I'll be a good boy. But, you know,
we haven't heard in a few years, Tony, so, you know.
Well, you know, a little bit more of an educated rant is around scaling frameworks. It doesn't have to be one of one particular type. But the leaning on the scaling frameworks, which some of them have some good things and bad things, but the reality is why are they looking for these scaling frameworks? It's so that, A, they can tick the box that they've actually done it, and, B, they can continue with their command and control behavior.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there, that one of the things I've been seeing of late is just this leadership where they talk the right words but don't really back that up with the right actions. And, you know, a lot of things, when you really get to the heart of in the organization, is people are trying to make change, but they're just being held back because they still have to do traditional reporting, or they still have to do very traditional documentations because, the audit process hasn't changed, or the finance process hasn't changed, or the HR hiring process hasn't changed. And those things are... they're not easy things to change, but if you truly want agility across the organization, at some point you have to start tackling the hard things.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, the reality of it is, if you don't change those things, then you're not really achieving that true agility that you're looking for, right?
So tell us a little more about. So you mentioned the heart of agile. So you're a little more closely involved with that than you have been in the past. Tell us a little bit about that. I'm intrigued. I'd like to know a little bit more about what's going on in that space.
Yeah, I guess so bingo. Alistair Coburn has really started to put a little bit more emphasis around it recently, and you'll see there's now a website you can go to. So little plug there, heartofagile.com. And he's started to pull together a community of practitioners, if you like. So rather than call us, I guess, consultancies, Heart of Agile guides, if you like. And we've got about 13 of them spread across the world. And started to put a little more emphasis around I think it all stems back. It's an interesting thing, but it stems back to a few moments in time. Craig Brown, for example, a good friend of ours at the podcast here in Australia, in Melbourne, was poking him quite some time ago, saying, listen, you've got all these things about this heart of agile and you're talking about it, but you really need to start getting something, you know, out there about it and put a community together. And I was sort of talking to him about it, and there were quite a few people, and it started to crystallize now, which has crystallized with just last weekend. We had a first Heart of Agile Leaders Conference or Guides Conference in Vienna. I wasn't there physically, but virtually. and really starting to put a little bit of mechanism around what is actually the heart of Agile, right? And I guess what we came up with is that it's really a reflective improvement framework that helps you find your way forward. So the whole idea of the elements of the heart of Agile, they're guideposts to help you orient yourself as you reflect, improve. I think the best description I have of the heart of Agile is the heart of Agile is a set of verbs. So when we talk about it, when I talk to people about this, if you think about the manifesto still stands in its own right, no change there, that's Agile. But it tells you the what. It's never told you the how. That's always been the interesting thing. Now, the heart of Agile being a set of verbs, it actually tells you the how. If you do these things and overlay that over the manifesto, you'll actually do agility and Agile in a much better way.
So one of the things I guess I'm interested in is if you go and look at theheartofagile.com, or you go and look at the diagram, all that's on there is those four words. So I'm interested when you say it gives you guidance, because I mean I read the names on the diagram and I get it that they make sense to me, but what I'm not entirely sure our listeners will know what you do with it. I mean, the words, you know, collaborate, deliver, reflect, improve, around the outside, and I look at those and go, well, yeah, I get that. How do I use that? How do I, Tony, use that as a coach or an agile practitioner, as you said, to, you know, produce those better results, to get better outcomes?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. So there's a number of different ways people are using it at the moment, but I call it a meta framework, right? So it's really an anchoring framework that I use when I start working with teams, with leaders, with organizations. So, for example, I did an organizational workshop last week, and what we did was we sat down with the Heart of Agile as our meta framework to anchor everything that we were thinking about in terms of designing the organization, saying, okay, if this organization is going to collaborate better, what are the things that we need to do to make it collaborate better? So we talked about the connective tissues and how we might unpack that, right? And it unpacks the way you want it to, but it's really starting to think about, okay, if we collaborate better, then we'll be able to do these things better. So how might we do that, right? So it's focusing those imperatives for you to collaborate. And then you say, okay, well, if we collaborate better, then that's going to help us deliver. Now, when you talk about deliver has a number of different facets. So I talk about directional decisions, which came out in that particular podcast that we were interviewing Alistair. And it's one that really has rung home with a lot of people, is that enabling them to make much more quicker directional decisions will then help you actually improve and deliver faster. And then we must always reflect on it and say, okay, if we're going to reflect, let's introspectively reflect and make sure that we use data to reflect. So it's starting to apply those mechanisms against each of those things so that you know exactly where you're going. So it's a guidepost. Okay. Does that help you, Craig?
And then obviously improve, which is obviously the and so it's interesting you sort of work around that diagram in a clockwise fashion. I mean, I guess the whole point of this is that I mean, even the manifesto has lots of words in it, and I guess the point behind this is really, if you could boil this down to four things, these would be it, right? Is that the?
That's the whole idea, right? And remembering again that they're verbs, so they actually tell you what to do. So collaborate, you guys, right? Deliver quickly. Stop and reflect on in a moment. Those types of things, which seems like very simple stuff, but if you look at the amount of organisations that aren't doing that.
So I guess the second part of my question is, I get those words, and I even get what you're saying, that that's a good conversation to have. Where does somebody go if they're intrigued by this? How do they get some guidance on how they might use this in order to help their organization or team improve?
Yeah, so theheartofagile.com, obviously. There's a couple of ways. So we have there's a Facebook, if you're onto Facebook, there is a Facebook group, which is the Heart of Agile Facebook group. You join that and you have access to everybody. Even Alistair will answer you. I guarantee you somebody from there will start to talk to you. Depending where you are in the world, if you look on the Heart of Agile guides or consultants part of the site, you'll find one of us and you can touch base with us and we're happy to help.
So I guess one of the, if I stand from the outside and just look at this, what's nice about this is that there was just the diagram. Now there's a little more content around the outside of it, but there's still not a lot of resources yet for people here. There's a few talks and I think a paper written in French and, a few blog posts along the way. But, is more stuff coming? Is that something you talked about?
Yeah, we are. So we're working on it at the moment. Bringing out some more of that stuff that will help people. We're also looking at how do we train or teach or coach someone, as you said, on Heart of Agile. So, for example, thinking about what's the first level of that. Helping people to learn to notice what's important, learn how to reflect on what's happening, gain ideas to way to start improvement. Showing them ideas suitable to their stage in their journey. So that will be some of those things that we're putting together. And you'll start to see more and more of that come out as we go.
So is the idea to, you said there's 13 consultants worldwide. Is the idea to grow those, or is the idea to grow that second level of people that are more, getting back to the basics and getting back to that Heart of Agile?
Bit of both. As we find the suitable guides, people who are really tuned into this and want to be part of this, I think that will grow. But definitely what you're saying is growing the community. So one of the things that Alice has been very, very clear about to all of us, I think, is that this is a community. He wants the community to work together to build this. I mean, one of the reasons, he even started on this journey. If you think about, and Craig, I used your diagram for this, so for those listeners who haven't seen it, just Google 40 methods of Agile and you'll find Craig's diagram used in so many different places. In fact, I think I even saw it on a toilet wall the other day.
Someone asked me to sign it the other day.
There you go, yeah. So if you look at it, you look where we came from. We came from, yourself and myself and a lot of other people started with, XP or FDD or whatever that might be, right? And what's happened is it's expanded into this many, many different facets and different types of things. And unfortunately, it's been over-commercialized and over-commoditized by people trying to make too much out of it than it should be, right? And over-decorated, I guess, is the word. And part of the Heart of Agile movement is getting the community of agilists together that want to scrape that all away and go back to the essence of what it should be. And really that essence is those four words, right? If you look at it, collaborate, deliver, reflect, and improve.
But where's the word scale, Tony?
Yeah, okay.
Oh, sorry, I can't even say that with a straight face.
you tried. Yeah. So you know what?
And with that little thing, ladies and gentlemen, Craig is never going to invite to be a consultant for Heart of Agile.
Actually, that's probably more likely to get you there.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, right. So tell us a little bit about the conference. We've all been to some conferences, and I've got a few to share with you as well. But obviously you're there virtually. But what happens at the Heart of Agile conference?
Yeah, it was interesting. So basically, bringing everybody from the, unfortunately, the guys in the, we call ourselves the Antipodean crew, weren't able to attend because of the time frames and things. So it was more the other side of the world. But basically it was bringing everybody together, A, to get to know each other, because there's a lot of really, really clever people, nice people, so that everybody could start to collaborate. And for this particular one was really starting to look around, a number of things around the Heart of Agile, so what is the Heart of Agile? In fact, what is Agile even now? What does that mean to us? What distinguishes it from the Scrum, the Safe, the Less, and the others?
So what is Agile now?
That's interesting. Interesting question, which well, you can imagine there would have been a lot of debate, right? And I think what we generally came up with was, you know, if you think about Agile, it's really as a work style. It can be characterized as early delivery of business value, reduced bureaucracy, rapid feedback loops, that type of thing. That's what Agile really was about. At the heart of it. Huh, get it? Heart of Agile?
I'm laughing on the inside, Tony.
Oh, sorry, I thought you might be, yeah. I thought you would be. But I think if you think about Agile in its true form, yes, it came out of software. We all know that. But it's been applied to so many different things now, and the Heart of Agile framework overlay at the top isn't just for software. It can be applied to any form of social intervention, you know, from humanitarian stuff to product development, whatever that may be.
So, yeah, Agile outside of IT has been a thing for a long time, yet really at the heart of it, if you still look at Scrum and you look at Scaled Agile and all those, there, despite all that talk, you can still see those software engineering roots. Even if the words have been changed, for a lot of people, they still look software engineering. So is there, was there discussion about what we can do to make that more accessible to others?
Yeah, and I think that's the thrust of the Heart of Agile itself as well, is if you think about it, what's software-ish about those four words? There's a definite point there, you know, of using the word reflect, right, rather than retrospective, which is always the words, right? So reflect. So if you look at the workshop I did the other day, I said we're going to reflect, and one of those tools we're going to use to reflect is a retrospective, but I could have used anything else, right?
Yeah, I guess deliver is probably the only word that that still has, somewhat IT connotation to it. I mean, I know that you deliver outcomes and you deliver documents, but I guess the rest of the world probably uses more words like produce and things like that. And I'm not sure we've got a good word that cross cuts.
I guess the way I've heard a really good talk from Alistair and it was something that I'd sort of been talking about as well along the way, and it's about those decisions, but I'd never heard it really vocalized as well as when we interviewed him. It came out like a piece of gold, I guess, is what we were saying, is it talked about the directional decisions, deliver means many things. It can mean delivering product, it can mean delivering, as you said, but it's, if you look at it, no matter what you're doing, where you're working, or even what you're doing in life, how many directional decisions do you make a day, Craig?
Oh, man, too many to count.
Correct, right. So, but the thing within an organization too is those directional decisions have very large connotations. So the better you collaborate, the better those directional decisions are. So I guess that's the thrust of the deliverer. I hadn't heard it described as so well for me up until that point.
Okay. Any other pearls of wisdom from your time with those folks?
Just amazed at the things that they're doing with this sort of thing. So it's really started to this Heart of Agile conferences popping up, this Heart of Agile meetups starting up, so have a look for those. I think that's really some amazing stuff being done. I think some of the case studies of like organizational design being used for it. If you look at Lego are using it as an anchor for their organizational agility.
Mm-hmm.
Even the Netherlands ING, you'll find they've used it as an anchor for their. So, you know, that was well renowned that they were using the Spotify model.
Yep.
I got that out.
The music streaming model, yep.
That thing that's not a model. But they've moved a lot away from that, and they're using the Heart of Agile as an anchor, and you'll find a really good diagram there they've done. So I think it's really starting to take hold. And as it takes hold, we'll have some more case studies. There'll be more from the different types of people. Hopefully we get a few conferences going, and we'll see where we go.
Excellent. Sounds good. So, I guess you know, if people want to know more about that, heartofagile.com is the best place to go start and look.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, try it. Just think, you know, this is what Agile was like when we first started, right? That's the thing that made it so fresh for me. It was like going, this is what I used to do. So if you want to experience that, or you want to see Agile in its more form that it was meant to be, just even try that in your daily work.
Excellent. Thanks, Tony.
Well, it's been my pleasure, Craig. Now, how about you, my friend? You've been to a few conferences lately.
Yeah, I've without a shadow of a doubt of a lie, Tony, I've been traveling a lot lately. And, I should take a photo of this, but I have in my hand, this is how you know that you travel too much, because the same day, same mailbox, my Platinum Velocity card, which is the highest tier of Virgin Australia, and my Gold Qantas Frequent Flyer card all both turned up on exactly the same day.
I think, my friend, you're traveling too much.
Yeah, that's whilst it's nice to have those cards, that's turning them up on the same day was that stark reality. Went, yeah, maybe time to go home for a little bit. But recently, I was over in the US and Canada, and got to stop by a conference in Toronto called Collision. So it's kind of dubbed the CES of the software development world, I guess. I don't know exactly what the number of people were there, but I heard numbers of 40,000 being thrown around initially. I think it was probably more like 25,000, but you know what? That's still a heck of a lot of people in order to go to a tech conference. It was in Toronto in the Enercare Centre, which is a massive convention centre, and this thing was full. Of exhibits and startups and 3 days of talks going all over the place. And I guess from that perspective, just to go to a conference of that size is just amazing. The biggest thing I've been to is the couple of thousand people at the Agile US conference. And obviously here in Australia we get, if we're lucky, 1,500 people to a conference like Agile Australia. That's about as large as it gets. So it was very interesting. Probably the equivalent here in Australia is CeBIT. That's probably the equivalent conference. But what was interesting was I did try to get along to a bunch of the sessions. I wandered around the booths and looked at a lot of the startups and things. I mean, the first thing is that there is a startup for everything. I don't think I walked past something where where somebody wasn't trying something, and someone was looked at and just rolled my eyes and go, really, people are going to pay for that? And some of them I walked past and went, that's a great idea, because it's every possible industry, every possible thing, and just all these people working really hard on these startups. And I talked to a bunch of people in the around the place and in the the lunch halls and stuff about what they're doing, and some really interesting stuff. I did go to a couple of sessions. The conference was kicked off by Justin Trudeau, the Canadian Prime Minister. Look, if I have to say something, one of the things that did strike me was that for a conference that size, the logistics of getting people around, they tried really hard, but things like their app didn't work terribly well and their communications were a bit lacking. And so the amount of people that were waiting outside to go and see the Justin Trudeau kickoff, they could only fit 1,000 people in the room, right? So do the math of how many people signed up for the conference and the amount. By the time I had got there and I was there early, it was already full to capacity. So I didn't actually get to go and see that. I was able to watch the live stream from the night events they had, but it was in a bar and those things are just so loud that you don't really get to see it. But it was kind of cool that that was the kickoff. But I saw lots of good talks, and I think if I sort of pick some of the things, because I went to obviously the things that were a little more agile or transformation like, and I think if the one that really stuck out to me was I went and saw a talk from Capital One. You know, Capital One is an interesting organization because the guy on stage who was the CIO, you know, referred to as a 25-year-old startup. So it's not an old bank or an old financial institution in the way that we think about traditional banks. You know, large US, European, Australian banks are hundreds of years old. But it's not an overnight startup either. It you know, it certainly has its roots in mainframes and legacy technologies. So it was an interesting talk. And essentially, they were talking about their digital transformation that they started back in 2011 and where they are, 7 years on. Really, what he was saying is that after that seven years, they're getting close. He didn't say getting close to being finished, but they're less than a year away from everything being in the cloud and shutting down their last data center. So think about that for a minute. For a bank, completely moving off the mainframe, completely moving off the localized servers, to everything being on the cloud. Talked a little bit about some of the challenges they had in doing a digital transformation, and starting with the belief that they couldn't use a bimodal operation; that had to be all or nothing. Believing that as a bank, they had to be a great technology company, that they need to change the whole company and how they operated. That bringing in new talent and listening to them was important. So they had to go in all in on cloud, all in on DevOps, and all in on Agile. And really, anybody that's there has to be kind of in on the transformational journey. But there's been no drop in productivity. In fact, it's the productivity has grown along the way by using Agile. There's been a senior embracement by senior leadership all along the way. But here's the thing I think that really got me, and I'm interested in your thoughts on this, Tony, because the thing that I think struck me, because I'm listening to this and I'm going, yeah, and look, I don't know anybody who's there, so there's always the, what's happening underneath. But it was an impressive talk. But I think the thing that resonated with me is that then he said, we're a 25-year-old startup and we still have the same founder. So essentially, right, the CEO was still the same guy 25 years later. The CIO, the gentleman was on stage, had been at the organization for 9 years. So think about that for a moment. They've been on a 7-year agile transformation, support from senior leadership. And I started to just reflect on where I think about the organizations that have gone well and the organizations that have stumbled. And if you look at organizations like Apple or Amazon or Google, think about the leadership. It doesn't change an awful lot. Think about Microsoft, right? It's been the same leader that's been there through their re-transformation, been there for a number of years now. And now I think about some of the organizations that I've worked with more recently, and I think about the number of restructures and transformations and leadership changes and things that go on. And so I'm interested in your thoughts on that. Do you think stability and leadership is a important thing?
I do. And I think I think you hit the nail on the head there, right, is that if you think about any of those organizations that we've worked for, the interesting thing is, it sort of breaks it into three sort of facets, I think. There's organizations that refactor themselves, right? And they do that in a considered method, but the leadership helps refactor them. Then you have the organizations that restructure themselves on a regular basis, and the regular restructuring of that is caused by the fact that the leadership changes.
Yeah, or even the leadership looks and goes, whoops, we mucked that up, let's try again.
Well, that's the third category, is whether the restructure is driven by those leaders, right?
And we have worked for organizations in the past, not mentioning any names, where it was restructure for the sake of restructuring.
I've never seen an organization, that one included, or any of the ones that I've been working that I've seen, over the period of time, you can't restructure yourself out of trouble.
Yeah, that's true.
It's that stability factor, which you just asked the question about. I really believe that stability factor, because there's a couple of things around that. And if you think about, the times when we worked together in an organization, was that it's that factor of knowing that particular leadership actually buys in and has a stake in the ground with it. And if you look at that organization, you know, you're going to leave it. How long was it they'd been there? That CEO?
Capital One had been there since, the CEO had been there since the beginning, so 25 years, and the CIO 9 years.
So, you know, you look at that, and when a CEO says, well, we're going to try something new and I'm backing it all the way, you can bet that his company and the people underneath him are going, well, if he's backing it, he's been here that long and he's not going anywhere, then we're going to go with him, right?
Hmm. Yeah, and I don't know how many sort of things below the scenes I had, but it was just something that resonated with me when I really started to think about, yeah, when people ask me about the success stories, there is a linkage to that stability of leadership, and it doesn't always necessarily need to be the same leadership. I mean, you can look at, organizations like Apple have, restructures and changes of leadership underneath them, but something remains stable in that, whether it be someone like Tim Cook, or you look at Amazon, the leadership there, even though he's a bit nuts, right, stays, the stable. I think there's an element to that that can't be understated. And the other thing is that founder and CEO, I mean, what's his stake in the organization? You think about large banks, large insurance companies, large utilities. You know, the CEO doesn't have a stake, right? The only stake they have is the shares bonus or the or the other thing, and it's almost like they know they're coming in like a political leader, and I've got 4 years, right?
That's it.
Maybe a little longer. And I just look at the organizations that don't fall into that. Those organizations that haven't fallen there so much, I don't know. There might be something there. I also know of a bunch of organizations, even ones locally to us, where the leadership hasn't changed in a while and they're still very stagnant. So, there is a flip side to that, where they just hold on to the past and don't move, and that also can be a risky venture. But it's an interesting thing to ponder. It just had me pondering as I was watching it. I went, I was sort of sitting there listening to it and going, yeah, but when he sort of said that, I went, yeah, there's actually, it was something. It was an interesting story and one that captured my attention. Interestingly, the other one that I went and looked at was another large bank in Canada called BMO. It's one of the larger banks, 200-year-old bank, 40,000 employees. What they refer to as a heritage bank, which I thought was a nice name for that. And they were talking about their agile journey, but it seemed to mirror what I tend to see in large corporates. So they'd been a couple of years into their digital transformation, and they were talking very much around how they're moving people, and they have 14 cross-functional teams, and they were starting to do co-creation and some of the things they were starting to play with, and it was an interesting journey. But you could see, one, they were a lot newer on the journey, and I guess secondly, the thing in the back of your mind where after having seen the Capital One process was, is this really going to stick for them? And I'm hoping that it will, because the things they were starting to do were very interesting, but they also seem to be taking a long while. There still seem to be traditional processes to get things out. They were talking about one of their new things they're rolling out, and they're still very risk averse as a bank, which you and I have worked at enough financial institutions to know what that's about.
It's an interesting thing, isn't it?
There was also a bunch of high-profile names, so I went and saw a talk by Ev Williams, who was the guy behind Twitter and Medium. So he was talking a little bit about what he's up to. There was some R&B stars, so Timbaland, people don't know him. I went and watched his talk, and he was actually interesting. Timbaland's not the sort of music I sort of listen to all the time, but
Timber what?
The young kids will know what we're talking about. Tony, you're more of a your music collection stops at 1983, doesn't it? but 1982 Up in Lights was the last album you bought. And the sad thing, Tony, is you're thinking about that, going, yeah, I remember that, a red cover, and anyway,
yes.
1980s various albums, people will in Australia will take you on any day. Anyway, the point is, he was interesting because he was talking about how he hears everything in music, right? The world to him is music. He can make a rhythm out of anything. In fact, one of the guys said, you know, what are you hearing right now? And he's going, oh, I'm hearing the hum of the crowd. I'm hearing the taps on the stage. And he said that he actually carries his phone around with him all the time, and he just takes little mini clips of noise just for inspiration. He said, if I had my phone in my pocket right now, I'd be recording this because, you know, there's something going on. And he talked about how, you know, sound and music guides us through life, and how he's really interested in how AI is going to help us inventing music. And I guess that's an interesting thing, because a lot of people see, you know, you talk about things like auto-tune and AI, and people run away in the other direction and sort of say, oh no, that's not real music. Whereas he says, look, AI is going to help us to mass produce more music, because he said, you know, I can bounce ideas off the AI. So instead of just me, you know, putting a couple of tracks down, he says, I could throw it 20 things and it can come back and say, what about these? And he said, I can reject all of them, but in fact, I might hear something or get something I've never thought of. And so he says, you know, technology is one of those things that, you know, is really inspiring him. And so his sort of message was, you know, not to give up on yourself, but, you know, challenge yourself through the doubt. And he was an inspiring, person to listen to. So it was good to see some of those people. In fact, he's just released a masterclass just recently. If you haven't seen masterclass.com, that's pretty cool, where, you know, people like Gordon Ramsay teach cooking, or Timbaland teaches music, or, and the guy who was interviewing Timbaland was from Masterclass, and he was talking just a little bit about that at the start, about, you know, how people told him that idea would never work, that you'd never get these experts wanting to share their knowledge. Right. And then again, that's a parallel to the agile industry, where, you know, people like Alistair, for example, are still sharing, you know, what they know. The heart of agile is a really good example of that.
Yeah, I'll make sure I go and look for Timberwood.
Timberland. I sat in the end. I also watched a talk from KFC, which was interesting. Do you know how old Colonel Sanders was when he created KFC, Tony?
Wasn't he like in his
50s? Yeah, 60, right? So he was,
he was old,
60 yeah. years old. He'd had all sorts of things he'd done before that. And, you know, so, you know, Tony, you've still got a couple of years in which you can make a change. There you go, bingo. All right, Craig makes fun of
it. You know, you think I was missing Renee. I am.
But KFC has 22,000 stores, 136 countries. They open a new restaurant every 6 hours. I think the interesting thing is that they were just talking about, you know, a lot of people don't think of technology alongside, you know, fast food. He was talking about, you know, things like, you know, their vision, KFC's vision is to make every day easy and rewarding for their customers and their teams like no other brand, which, you know, is interesting. That's not what you'd think of as a vision for KFC. You know, that they try to leverage the data is that, they don't get a lot of people. A lot of people don't eat KFC and provide their, like, log in with their details, for example. But he was saying that they only have about 3% of customer data, but that's actually enough to give them a lot of insights, because when you think about the number of, you know, 22,000 stores, 136 countries, 3% is actually a, you know, heck of a lot. So he's saying, you know, you don't have to, you know, necessarily have lots to know things. Loyalty programs, have been really useful to them because they get to know their best customers and they can do things like personalized menu. They're using things like Google Glass for staff training and standards checks because they can't always get to all the stores or keep a consistency across the stores. You know, using things like automated delivery, drones and things for delivery is things they're looking into. AI in voice, right? So for things like when you order at the drive-through, starting to use more AI so you don't get that annoying thing where you have to keep yelling at the person to get your order right. That they use Agile to work faster and quicker, and they have to embrace digital. So all this sort of stuff about online ordering. So it was, again, an interesting thing that I haven't really ever worked in that space, interesting to see how they've been using, you know, technology and agility.
It's interesting because you see a number of those companies trying that now, like Domino's, for example.
Yeah, Domino's is a good example of of interesting innovations like that, and obviously McDonald's has been doing things like that for a few years. But I hadn't really thought of things like AI or drone delivery or things, but they all make sense when you start to think about it. So, technology is certainly eating the world. And there's a bunch of other ones. I won't sort of go through them in any detail, but I listened to some talks from the New York Times, from Hilton, from, some credit companies. I listened to some stuff on chaos engineering, regulations, regulated industries around the world, other sort of banking things. So there's about 14 stages, I think, that you could go and listen to talks on. And it was just I was there for 2 or 3 days, but it was a, massive conference. And if you are in that part of the world, it is an interesting thing to check out if you get the opportunity. They run a similar one in Hong Kong called RISE, as well as Web Summit in Europe. So it's the three of them they run each year. But interesting stuff.
Speaking of conferences, Craig,
Tony,
we should be seeing each other one very shortly. So Agile Australia,
we should be, yes, back in Sydney.
So. Given the speakers there, is anyone there that piques your interest?
Well, you've got folks like Jez Humble and having a mental blank.
Muddy Kagan.
Muddy Kagan, thank you. That's the one I was trying to think of. Yeah, I was trying to think the guy that Jeff Patton told me about, and the book Inspired. All those things were in the top of my head, and I couldn't spit it out. Yeah. So they're, I guess, the two main Agile World speakers. Interesting program, probably one of the more interesting rounded programs I've seen in a little while. So some interesting talks there. I've shepherded a few talks, and those two talks I shepherded will be very interesting as well. Good range of speakers, and look forward to catching up with friends old and new at that conference.
Yeah, I was at part of the Squid Tanks. So the Squid Tanks, for anybody listening, is an opportunity for anyone who's going to speak. To come along and people like myself or others who've spoken at conferences to sort of give them feedback and help them coach through some of those submissions. So some of the ones I saw, I think and I know a couple of those were accepted, I think they're pretty high quality. So I'll be looking forward to seeing some of those.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing I did get to do when I was over in Canada was I also dropped into the XP conference in Montreal. I only got to drop in for a day, but it ran for about 5 days in Montreal. The XP conference was recently taken over by the Agile Alliance. It's been an academic conference for many years, so it's sort of interesting when you think about XP Extreme Programming. More on the technical side, and whilst there was a lot of technical and particularly a lot of papers written by academics in research, and some very interesting research papers that I have the papers and plan to actually have a good look through them, because research is something that people are always looking for. I just had someone today contact me and ask me if there was any research on this. People tend to not want to adopt something if there's no research on it. Someone asked me today, for example, is there any research on the benefits of normal visual boards versus electronic boards? And I'm thinking, I don't need research to tell me that it's hard to see things on a screen, but but it's interesting. People want that type of data, so it's good that conferences like that exist. I only sat in a couple of sessions. I sat in a really awesome conflict workshop, which I really enjoyed, and was kind of timely, given that I was actually trying to write some slides around conflict at the time. So that helped me out a little bit, just to make sure I was on the right track. And I also went and saw a couple of local lads from New Zealand, from Westpac New Zealand, talking about some of their big room planning, which was which was interesting as well. A much smaller conference to the main one. There was only a couple of hundred attendees there, but still had a good vibe to it. And again, a different mix of people. It was very much bringing together that academic crowd and the commercial crowd. So interesting one that I got to spend a day at.
Yeah, great. And what's been on the reading for Craig? Seeing as you've been flying around every time, just for those who are interested, every time I talk to Craig, where are you today? Cambodia. Really?
Yeah, I think I've visited almost every Southeast Asian country, been to New Zealand, been to America and Canada, and a few states in Australia along the way. Look, this is one I've actually... in fact, this is actually something we haven't talked about on the podcast. Are you aware of Menlo Innovations, Tony?
Not at all, Craig. Elucidate whilst I ruminate.
Okay, then. A few years ago now, this is not a new book, and I suspect a lot of our listeners have read this, but Rich Sheridan wrote a book a number of years ago called Joy Inc. You're talking about joy. And so Menlo Innovations is the company that Richard Sheridan is the co-founder of. And so I'd heard about Menlo Innovations. I'd heard about their anthropologists. I'd heard about some of their things. And so late last year, I was lucky enough to be in Detroit, Michigan, and got the ability to go on one of their short tours. So it was, I think it was a 3-hour tour, not like Gilligan's Island, but it was a 3-hour tour or so of Menlo Innovations. And so I guess the thing is, for anyone who's read the book, so the reason I mentioned this is you mentioned one of my reading, and I've gone back now to read the Joy Inc. Book from Rich Sheridan. The interesting thing is that sometimes you read these books, and I'm sure you've read plenty of agile books or business books over your time, Tony. You look at it and go, is that really how it was? The same thing in conference talks. You wonder, how much are they really putting this on?
What's the difference between the reality and the truth, right?
So we went in for this tour, and it was pretty much like it said on the can. And we were there sort of in the corner. Like, they have this, they're a pretty successful company. But their office is is below a parking garage in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Right? Ann Arbor's about an hour from Detroit. So it's in a basement. No windows, just a big open space with people pairing all over the place. We were in one corner, and a couple of the Menlodians, as they call them, came over to talk to us. But I was sort of watching out of the corner of my eye when I went there, and people are just going on their way. And it was interesting to watch. Like one of the workers had their child in the office, and the child was getting passed around to different people. As they were working, the child wasn't really making a lot of a fuss. It was a young child, under the age of one. But I was obviously allowing the work-life balance. I don't even exactly know who the parent was. I didn't really identify that. I suspect that might have been one of the people holding the baby, but it was being passed around as, different people were pairing on different things. There was a dog in the office. The dog was just, was sitting at the end of the desk, and it looked rather happy, but was just, kind of content being there. And people were just pair programming in real time. And it was one of those things. It was like, it was good to see. And so, having read the book and having read, essentially the Joy Inc., that's how it felt to me. And I just don't think that you could fake that, for 3 hours as we were sitting in there for a walkthrough, because they have these walkthroughs all the time, and they just have to get on and get things done. And you could see that just by the backlog of work, by the visual charts on the walls, by all the things that were going on, that they actually were getting things done. But more interestingly, they do these tours, and they'll pretty much answer any question you have. Like, there wasn't anything really off limits, right? They talked about, for example, how their pay scales are very transparent, and their hiring processes, and we're able to see the actual chart that they use. We're able to see how they do planning. They have a very interesting way of planning, which probably wasn't as evident to me from having read the book the first time around to actually having seen it, but. Interestingly, they use hours as their planning mechanism. And what they have is they essentially have a 1-week sprint, and they have this big piece of A3 paper that represents the sprint. And essentially, there is about 4 hours or 6 hours of the week chopped off, essentially for the key ceremonies. So showcase, retrospective, planning. The other 36 hours in the week is essentially available for the customer to fill up with stories. And so what happens is the pairs, so this is the key thing, pairs go away and come up with the estimates for the story for the team. And the pair puts back in and says, this is what we believe our estimate to be. And that is essentially given back to the customer. And what the customer can do is they can work through the backlog and they can just keep placing things into the sprint until it's full. But it's based on the hours that something takes. But the thing is, the way they do it is they fold the paper in a way that allows them to visually see that the sprint is full. And so once the piece of paper is full, once 36 hours is full with this folded paper, then the sprint is full. And it seems, when I read it, I kind of went, I get it. But it wasn't until they actually demonstrated it, until I actually saw it in action, I went, there's actually a lot of power in that. And it comes back, coming back around to what you were saying before, is that heart of Agile, it's not over-baking it. There's no, six story points equals 3 hours kind of, garbage going on there. It's rounded off to the nearest, I think they're doing 4 hour increments. So essentially it's half days, of work. So there is a bit of, ability for slack, built into the process. But everyone, still, works hard. Like certainly the machine was operating as we were there. But what got me was just the happiness in the, in there. And so, the whole thing about joy was really there. So I'm going back and, rereading the book just to, refresh myself from having done the tour back in December. But, if you're ever in that part of the world, you're definitely worth going and seeing. And I think Rich has just released his second book around being a chief joy officer. So I think that's more of a leadership book, and I haven't actually looked at that yet. But, if you haven't read Joy, Inc. by Rich Sheridan, great book to go read. But, the tour is also fantastic. Lots of little, just nuggets of information in there. And, again, like anything, their organization is about 50 people. So... the thing is that looking at it and with the other people I was doing the tour with, we were sort of talking about going, look, I don't think this would scale terribly well, but that's not the point. And I think there's lots of things that, even though you may not be able to replicate some of those in your organization, I think you can learn from those. And that's really the point in the book, is that, it's really about how do you spark joy? How do you make a workplace that people love? Is the point. And so I think the thing is that what really back it up was that I had read the book, but seeing it in action, I went back to read the book and going, actually, right, everything I saw, tends to match for real. And that was a real eye-opener.
The interesting thing about it is that listening to you talk through it, you just said that the heart of Agile actually flies with that. And you think about it, it's that collaborativeness that they're talking about, even, to the point where they are the two pair, and do the estimates themselves, and they then, does pair programming and they collaborate with everybody else. It's something that, if you could just make that small leap, even in your own teams, you would have better success.
Yeah, absolutely. And it goes through everything in there. I mean, it goes through, they talk about their hiring, where, essentially the teams, the people that, that hire the new starters, the teams are responsible for deciding if somebody, is due a pay bump. It doesn't need, 16 levels of management to come and make the decision, which is very interesting. The CEO can certainly weigh in or, be part of it, but it's not their decision in isolation. So it seems to work reasonably well. What about you, Tony? What's on your reading list?
The interesting thing is I've been fairly busy, so I haven't been reading a lot. But the one I have been rereading, I read it some time ago, but the more I've started to work in organizational leadership and that type of thing, The Responsibility Process by Christopher Avery.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think the more I read it, the more it started to come home to me that, this aligned with some of the work that I've been doing with the Heart of Agile stuff and working with leaders. I'm not sure I understand. And Siri doesn't understand either, apparently.
Apparently, yeah.
I have no idea how that triggered, but anyway. it's understanding that some of this responsibility and this accountability is really important to organizational success.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great book. I think, you know, there's a lot of work gone into it. And the more I read through it and start to delve further into it, you know, I read it the first time, you know, one of those books where you read and think, yeah, that's great. And I should do some of that, but I never did.
Hmm.
And now I've sort of come back to it. I've gone, you know what, this stuff actually has some real depth of sense about it. And I mean, I've been lucky to have met Christopher and seen him talk about it, but when this time around, I think it's really just that moment in time for me.
Well, yeah, I certainly, Tony, we talked about this just recently in our discussions, but I remember the first time I had seen Christopher, and in fact, I talked about it on a podcast, and you could probably go back to episode 40 or something if you really want to go find this, when I first got to see him and talking about the leadership gift. And I remember coming back and going, Tony, you need to look at this. And you're like, yeah, another model, blah, blah, blah. And you know, when I remember Renee and I did an interview with him, I'd said to Renee, look, I'm interviewing Chris Avery. This was the Agile conference a few years ago in DC. And she wandered along late, didn't even know, I think, who the guy was. You know, sits down for the interview. And I remember getting to the end and going, that was awesome. Who's that guy? He just had his stuff just has that presence that when you really start to think about it and drag it in, he's someone that he just has a way of you're really connecting with that right audience.
Yeah, and I think the thing about the responsibility process is it's not actually rocket science, which many of these things aren't, but it really puts it in a way of making you turn around and say, well, it's easy for me to say, you know, it's somebody else's fault, but the reality is I've got to take responsibility for some of these things as well.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. You can do a whole leadership gift program and things with Christopher as well.
Yes, that's something I'm about to start myself, and you and I have both been talking about that as well, so.
Yeah, which reminds me, you need to send me a link to some of that stuff, Tony. But nonetheless, another thing I just want to mention, because I think it's a resource that more people need to know about, is an initiative called the Brightline Initiative. Have you heard of this, Tony?
No.
If you go to brightline.org, this is the website. Brightline is a coalition that was put together. It was founded by the PMI, the Project Management Institute, our good friends at the Boston Consulting Group, BCG, as well as the Agile Alliance. And it's one of those things it's hard to explain, but basically, its objective is essentially to do a better job of, connecting leaders to strategic initiatives and help enterprises reduce the failure rate of transformations and large-scale initiatives. And so, over the last couple of years, they've been really putting together some pretty good resources that if that's a space that you're playing in, it's well worth going to take a look at. I have in my hand at the moment, they sort of published a book last year called Strategy at Work, which has a bunch of just short articles in it, which you can kind of find online if you're interested. But if you go and look at the website, there is a pile of resources, a pile of talks and things, and they've been doing the circuit a lot of large conferences. It was one of the reasons why I was actually at the Collision conference, because they were a sponsor there, and I got to meet some of the people behind it, people like Ricardo from the PMI, who's essentially the founder, I guess, is probably the best name, or the director of Brightline, and a couple of the other core people behind it. But I've just started to really delve into some of the content there. And so if you're in that kind of space of transformation, it's something that I you have to sort of be in the right place. It's I don't want to say it's not well publicized, but probably for the agile audience, probably is not something that a lot of people tend to stumble over. If you're in that space and just looking for some different things about transformations and strategic leadership, strategic initiatives, Brightline is an interesting thing to go look at. So check it out, brightline.org.
Excellent. Yeah, I think the other book I've consumed since the last time we spoke is a book. I've been doing quite a bit of work with OKRs. So for those who are not a fay with that particular word, that's objectives and key results, which is a goal setting approach popularized pretty much in Google.
But invented yet?
Intel.
Yeah, Andy Grove.
Andy Grove, there you go. You thought you were going to give me that one, didn't you? Yeah, so, but Google, Amazon, many companies are using it now. So there's a book that's, if you're interested in OKRs at all, that I would recommend is by a guy called John Doerr, and it's called Measure What Matters.
Oh, yeah. So is that book primarily about OKRs?
Yeah, well, it is actually. It's I think the synopsis of it talks about it. It's the revolutionary movement behind the growth of Intel, Google, Amazon, Uber, and really talks about measuring what matters by using the objectives and key results and the goal setting.
Okay, interesting. Because I was looking at when I did OKRs, I used a book that I really enjoyed called Radical Focus.
Yes, I read that one as well.
By Christina Wodke. That was kind of my book, and mm-hmm. I liked that because it was also a story about a couple of founders and their journey to OKRs. So you know we always go back to the Phoenix Project is probably the best known book that's it's a bit like a story, and it's kind of that plus a bit of content in the back of it. I hadn't realized Measured What Matters was I thought that was more about metrics and not so much about OKRs, but
no. Well, it does have its metrics in it, but it ties around the OKRs, and it's quite interesting because there's lots of contributions from, obviously Larry Page, Bill Gates, but interestingly even from Bono, who uses it within his charities.
He uses it to figure out how impressive his latest U2 track is.
Yeah, I don't know if he uses it for that.
I think we should have a stretch goal and see if we can, we can hit this target.
Yes, is that inspirational?
Not sure. Okay. So what's the name? What's the name of that book again?
Measure What Matters.
Okay, excellent. So look out for that one.
Yeah, John Doerr.
John Doerr. Right, good stuff. Well, Tony.
Well.
Before we know it, we've killed an hour.
An hour.
Yeah. Sorry, listeners. a commute in a bit. So if you stuck around this long, thanks for being there. We promised we'd tell you the secret of Agile, and there you go.
Oh, I thought I missed that bit. Okay.
it's probably on the editing room floor. There you go.
That's it. For those who are interested, of course, Agile Australia will also be podcasting from Agile Australia again. So there'll be, we'll get to the Vox Pops maybe in a couple of years' time, Craig?
Yeah, we'll get there eventually. Yeah. A little bit of a backlog, but, keep it interesting.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I guess the other thing we will say is that, if you do have something interesting to talk about, or you've got a book coming out, or you've invented something cool, drop us a line at the Agile Revolution, either on the email or hit us via the socials or on the website, and we'd love to hear from you. We're always interested in talking to new guests.
Yeah, for sure. That is absolutely right. And you can find me at Tony at theagilerevolution.com.
And I'm Craig at theagilerevolution.com.
And I guess that brings us to the end. So there's only one thing left to say, Craig.
See you later and good night, Tony.
Yeah, that and.
Oh yeah,
Viva.
On the count of seven.
Oh, count of seven now. Okay. Yeah. Look, has it been that long since we've done a podcast? Okay.
on the count of three. One, two, three. Viva.
Viva
la revolution.
Bye, Renee.
Good to talk to you, Tony.
Cheers.